The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Delighted to have you here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Join the conversation at 770-563-3770-KMED. The email, Bill, at BillMyersShow.com. Read them all. Try to respond to as many as I can. Sometimes I just need a serious drink at the end of the day, and so I don't get to the emails. No, just kidding. Just in case the health insurer is listening. But, of course, you know, knowing that tonight is going to be the State of the Union with President Biden, a couple of questions I would have for you. What would be, in fact, I even asked my boss and I were talking about this, George and I were talking about this a little bit, of course. He figures that we're going to hear a lot about, we're not going to talk much about Ukraine. We're going to pivot to jobs, et cetera. And he's probably right about that because what good can he really talk about that's happened over the last year or so? And that's true. But what would you think is the real level? What's the bar that Joe Biden has to meet today to have that be considered a successful State of the Union? What is the bar? Tell me what you think is the bar. To me, I think the bar is relatively low. If he is able to just get through the speech without one of those staring at the teleprompter, frozen kind of moments, I'm thinking that is the level. I know that the Democrats would probably prefer that the level be higher, but you know, as long as he's able to stick to the script, if he wanders off the script, that's where the problem's going to be. That's what I'm thinking. But what do you think the level of, the standard of the State of the Union will probably be tonight? Because he's obviously infirm. I mean, everyone knows it. The entire world knows it. This is just the reality. And we don't appear to really have a mechanism other than the 25th Amendment, which I'm sure the system doesn't really want to go there. If it was President Trump acting this way, oh, gosh, he would have been gone like 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we would have been gone. You know that, right? And but it's either that, you know, Democratic Party's probably just going to keep him there as long as Joe wants to be there, as long as Jolton Joe's there. It's going to be his nomination. He'll be the nominee, apparently, unless there is some massive, massive uproar in the Democratic Party. But the one thing I will say about the Democratic Party, which is why they can be quite effective, even with some of the dimmest bulbs in power, is that they unite. There's not a lot of dissent there. And the dissent that they do have, they kind of let them blow off their steam, but then just let them go, you know, their way, that kind of thing. Like the squad, you know, that sort of thing. But what is the level? What's the level of performance? 770-563-3770-KMED. That's one question that we can pose this morning. I'm curious how Postal Service is working for you here in Southern Oregon. Butch ended up writing to me, was talking about how horrible he thought the local Postal Service has been. And there's been this consolidation, moving a lot of the mail sorting going over to Portland. And it has to do about budgeting. They have to try to keep the spending down. But has it been causing problems for you in mail delivery? I'll be the first to admit, I just don't use it that often. In fact, the only thing that I mail out on a regular basis are prizes for the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. I don't even do it at home. I have a bunch of stamps at home, but okay, the Christmas cards come around, and I'll do things like that, and I'll write an occasional note. But all my bills I either pay with auto pay or online. I just go in there and hit the send, and I pay my credit cards, log into the bank, you know, that sort of thing, pay them off every month. You know, that don't carry balances. They probably hate me for that. But I just don't use the mail. I mean, it's I expect the mail to come in, and so I haven't noticed the issue, but I'm seeing that there are a lot of people are really upset about the way that they're moving the mail sorting up there. And Butch was wondering, well, isn't there a way that we could do this more effectively and sort it down here? Well, yeah, we used to do that, but it costs more money. It costs more money, and the Postal Service just cannot afford it. The Postal Service is a quasi-governmental slash private situation. It's always being subsidized by Congress. And people are expensive. People and their pensions, especially the pension program at the USPS, is a mess too. So they've had to try to bring it into reality. And I'm not convinced people are using it to the same extent that they used to. They used to have a lot more magazines that would go through that they would get paid for. And essentially, you're having more and more of it. More and more of the time, I swear that United States Postal Service is delivering Amazon. It's kind of the discount broker for Amazon deliveries. Could be. But I don't really notice it because I just don't send that many mailed items out. And so I'm not sitting around worried about it. But how about you? Do you notice it? 770-5633, Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Let me go to line one. Hi, KMED, KCMD. Good morning. Hello. Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is Jason. I was calling about your question about Biden and the State of the Union.
Yeah, what do you think is what's the success level? What's the bar he has to reach, you think, tonight?
I agree with you. It's just getting through it without, falling apart.
Oh.
But last year I was fairly impressed with his composure, and I think they just pump him up with, amphetamines or something like that to get him through it. But my question is who, watching the primary and he won, most states by like 80%. And I want to know who are these people doubling down on Biden? And I'd like some of them to call in and explain to us, like, how could you vote for this guy for another 4 years?
Yeah. And there's so much support for it when there was an alternative, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily a man about town, but I know a lot of people. I don't think I know a single person that's like, I want another 4 years like the last 4 years. And I voted for Biden again in the primary. So where did these numbers come from?
Just between me and you, did anybody really want a repeat of the 2020 election?
But no, I think if he gets through without dribbling down his chin or, just completely losing complete composure, I think that's a win.
Well, they have pretty good drugs in the White House, apparently. And it's not just what was left over at the press center, from Hunter, whatever it was that one day, that locker. But yeah, no doubt. It's obvious that you're right. A year ago, he actually seemed to perform okay. Now, there's a possibility that he's invigorated by the pomp and the circumstance and Jill probably has like a little electric shock collar that's, buried underneath there that if he starts to wander off, she'll just hit the button and, do that. But all right. So pretty much that way, too. And all right, who would be voting for Biden? Well, it's kind of what I said in the beginning when I mentioned that one of the things you can say about the Democrats is that it doesn't matter how decrepit and feeble or just plain old venal their leader is, they line up. They really do line up, and there's a unanimous force that it's all about the power. It's all about the power. They'll figure out the policy as long as they have the power. I think that's part of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
And while the Republicans were sitting around and going, Nikki Haley, she's a bit of a warmonger, but she's really good over here, and Donald Trump, well, yeah, he needs another chance to, we're sitting around there debating fine points, and then the Democrats are saying, it doesn't matter, we got the power. We're going to have the power. We're going to take over everything. And and they just line up in order to get the power, and they're very effective at it. And that's been one of the challenges. How do you keep a principle against people that will line up and vote for anything? Thanks for the call. All right, let me go to line two. Hi, KMED, KCMD. Good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Jane.
Hi, Jane. What's on your mind today, huh?
Okay, I got 3 points to make.
Okay.
One, they keep telling everybody, trying to insult President Trump by calling him golden.
Golden?
Orange.
Golden? Or you mean orange?
Orange.
I think he almost kind of embraced the orange man as kind of a badge of courage. It's kind of the way I look at it. You get nicknamed, what the heck, He is a little orangey at times.
Yeah, but are they insulting the orange rabbits or are they insulting President Trump? Because they have to insult both of them if they keep referring to it as bad.
Okay, what are the orange rabbits? I have no idea what you're speaking of, Gene.
The orange rabbits that helped you save money.
The orange rabbits that helped you?
They had it on TV. I don't know if they still have it though or not because I don't watch the regular TV.
Oh.
Even if I could.
Okay, so there's one point. What's your next point then?
What is Biden and Harris and the head of Homeland Security going to do about the fact that their mass terrorists have already came out.
Well, you have to understand, though, in their way of thinking. See, you're looking at if someone's in power in America, like Biden, Harris, Mayorkas, that their goal is the health, safety, and welfare of the American people, right? That's the position that you're coming from. Do you really think, given their behavior, that that's the way they look at America?
I'm looking at the point that they opened the border.
Yeah.
They say everyone is okay. But they've got terrorists in this country because they're wearing masks and shooting.
You see, you're looking at, they don't look at America the way you do. They look at America as
Detroit.
Yeah, they look at America as the goal is power, and they don't stay in power, frankly, if people like you and I are happy. They want us gone, okay? They want us they don't want us living in rural areas or semi-rural areas. We're all supposed to be in our climate-friendly, equitable community without a car because it's too expensive. And they, of course, will be doing just fine. It is about a great replacement of sorts, and I know you're not supposed to say that in Washington, D.C. How dare you? But all you have to do is just look at they're upset that the more sensible people of the country will not vote for them. So the idea of bringing in the mayhem is to essentially make life difficult for us and make us not look forward to the future. You don't have kids, and then you have a self-fulfilling prophecy. What's your third one, quickly, and then I got to go, okay?
Okay. Shoot.
Okay, well, next time, all right? I got to move along, but I always appreciate your call, Gene. Gene and Joe County, let's go to line three. Hi, KMED, KCMD. Good morning.
This is Minor Dave.
Oh, it's a hat trick now. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing pretty good, but I've seen a report from Channel 12 on Google that Siskiyou County Health Division has issued a hazard warning not to drink the water from the Klamath River, not to use it for pets or livestock, and not to water crops with it.
But don't worry, the fish are being restored right now as we speak. The fish populations,
well,
okay?
It's a prelude to get a disaster declaration, because now the county supervisors should take action on that hazard warning.
Captain Bill will be on at 8:10 this morning, and we'll continue down that that Klamath River rabbit hole, okay? We'll do that.
All right. Thank you.
All right. See you then. Thanks, Dave. 770-5633, Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hello, who's this?
Oh, thank you. This is Gregory off of Shady Cove.
Gregory and Shady Cove, what's on your mind today?
Conspiracy Thursday.
Yes.
And they were talking about kind of the traffic downtown, and it's going to be like a two-part statement. But how long before they bring down like the little rickshaws or bicycles, things that people they drive.
Oh yeah, I would give it about 5 to 10 years, and it'll probably be some kind of grift like the scooter people that ended up signing up with the city of Medford. City of Medford will get some little bit of royalty out of it or something, and then they'll have the rickshaw type things. Remember, it was even in Jacksonville a number of years ago. There was like Jacksonville Vision 2040, 2050. I recall what they always have 2030, 40, or 50. You know, with like the United Nations kind of plans for them. And they said, well, you just need to shut down the roads and then have former timber workers tow rickshaws for the tourists in Jacksonville. They actually said that out in the open. It was very funny, come to think of it. But, yeah, I guess they're always figuring, the listener from Shady Cove, that they'll always be the ones riding in the rickshaw instead of towing the rickshaw around. Okay. Hi, KMED, KCMD. Good morning.
Morning, Bill. Bob Shandon, Medford.
Bob, how are you?
I am wonderful. Upright, and so all great things are possible today. With regards to the State of the Union, I'll just give you a short backstory. You know, as a youth on Sundays, we would go to great-grandma and grandpa's house, and Grandma lived with him at the time as well. And the family would hang out, and we would hear stories about the oldie times and stuff, and the kids would drift in and out between there and the kitchen with a nice bay window.
Isn't that kind of like President Biden, the way he addresses things a lot of times?
Yeah, it was a wonderful Sunday morning. So
yeah.
I think they, instead of a podium, they set the stage up with a living room, dining room kind of sort of area. And have conversation.
Maybe a fireplace and a basset hound sitting next to him, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But pay attention to what's going on at the kiddie table, because that's our future.
Oh, man. I love that term, the kiddie table. The kiddie table.
All right, man.
Yeah, darn straight. Hey, by the way, there was something you were mentioning that, gosh, you sent me an email this morning. And what's the council going to be looking at tonight?
Oh, yeah. This isn't a council thing. This is a planning commission thing.
Oh, planning
the
commission.
The council's kind of
Sorry.
A little bit boring, although there's something going on. But it's not really great. But with regards to the 15-minute city thing, on the Planning Commission, they're going to be looking at building a 15,000-square-foot hardware store just north of the Roxy Ann Winery over there on the east side.
Oh, so part of our 15-minute city means that you will, you know, if you need, let's say, something for your little hovel downtown in your sustainable development apartment complex that the city of Bedford will invite in there, you'll be walking then over to the hardware store, right?
Yeah, so you can go to Roxy Ann Winery and get hammered, go over to the hardware store, buy a hammer, and sing "If I Had a Hammer" on your way back to the subdivision over there. So
God bless America. Gotta love it. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting when you talk about that. On one hand, it is almost like they're trying to set up this bifurcated society in which you know, all the poor. Maybe the plan is that for the poor, useless eaters in the Tina Kotek kind of world, they'll be the ones in the sustainable 15-minute neighborhoods. You think that might be what is going on here? How that plays out?
You know, I think they're trying to make every city like Portland, and not every city can be like Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
You know,
hey,
and gosh, you know, where's it going to head? Because, you know, the Roxy Ann Winery is a nice place. There's you know, like 20 acres of vineyards right just north of that. It's a nice little bucolic setting. You know, it's off the main drag. But that whole acreage up there, it's gone through a couple different manifestations, from housing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But commercial properties make more money than houses. And we'll see where
not,
it goes.
Well, not right now, though. I was talking with a real estate person when I was at First Crush over the weekend, and I was asking her. I said, "Is commercial real estate in the crisis that they've been reporting?" And she was telling me, "Yeah, it's kind of looking like that. You can't have a society in which you're still there, Bob."
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I thought you hung up there. You can't have this society where you're trying to tell everybody you're going to stay within your little lane here, within your neighborhood. You're never supposed to go anywhere else except within, you know, a short distance of where you live, and then have a bunch of commercial real estate with offices and things like that. It's just, you know, that's they're trying to get rid of that concept. And even right now, there's a lot of empty real estate around the United States of America, especially in the big cities. And yet the big cities are where they're trying to shove everyone into. So,
Yeah, they'll just convert them into low-income housing.
That's pretty hard to do, though. I've read some pretty interesting blogs about that, in which there are only certain types of commercial office space that can really be converted into a residential housing. And it has to do with, you know, availability of bathrooms, where the plumbing and the wiring is, and it has to pencil, you know, that kind of thing. So,
it'll get subsidized.
Everything's a subsidy. What could go wrong? Appreciate the call, all right? Thank you.
Have a great morning, Bill.
You too now. 6:31.
Rise and shine with the ultimate breakfast experience from Artisan Bakery Cafe. You'll be wowed once again with this limited-time veggie breakfast bagel sandwich. A fresh-baked toasted bagel layered with cream cheese, egg, cheddar cheese, onions, pepperoncini, and fresh tomato. A breakfast sensation sure to give your day a jumpstart. Wait, there's more. Bacon breakfast bagel sandwich also available for a limited time. Order online at DoorDash or visit 1325 Center Drive across from South Fred Meyer.
Do you owe the IRS back taxes you can't afford? Are your finances underwater? First Response Resolution in Eagle Point solves tax problems. Their CPA will represent you with the IRS and defend your rights as a taxpayer. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com to schedule your free consultation.
The purchase of another gutter manufacturing machine has spurred speculation at the offices of Fontana Roofing.
Yes, we'll custom fabricate them on-site in your choice of 30 colors and includes heavy-duty hangers, zinc-plated screws, and complete downspouts. Great. Talk to you soon.
Another quote?
Yep. They're deciding between copper, steel, or aluminum. All will last decades. Even when they're occasionally plugged, they can handle the weight of water and leaves.
And space dust. Researchers have calculated about 5,200 metric tons of micrometeorites fall to Earth every year.
Huh. Ooh, what about bird poo? I'm guessing that's got to be in the millions of tons dropping from the sky every day into the gutters.
Fontana Roofing manufactures sturdy, custom gutter systems to withstand just about whatever lands on your roof. Call Fontana Roofing for your next set of gutters. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Appreciate you waking up here. 6:33, we'll check the latest news from our NBC5 news partners in just a moment. And we're going to talk with Dr. Josh Umber, and it has to do about reducing healthcare costs. And I think it's an interesting talk, and it's at the Atlas Medical. What I think is that we're facing right now is... The cracks are, I mean, for as much as they talk about Social Security actually is in much better shape than Medicare and the medical system here. And you even see the cracks going on here in Southern Oregon, where we used to make fun of what they're looking at over in Canada and the UK, where, oh, yeah, you'll get a chance to visit your oncologist if you're diagnosed with cancer. It'll be a six-month wait, and then they hope that you die before you get there, but... How is that all that difference right now in Southern Oregon when you try to get a specialist and it's 90 days, 120 days, 150 days to get in? Happens all the time. Move into town and try to get a cardiologist right away. Yeah, good luck. You know, good luck on such things. Well, we'll talk with Josh Umber about that. He has some ideas, and we'll kick that around here in just a couple of minutes. And I also wanted to focus a little bit on the green energy fraud here. We have Ken Braun, and there's this whole focus on and drama surrounding wind power. And I think it's important to know what's going on because here in Southwest Oregon, we're told that, hey, you got to shut down the coal plants. We get rid of Boardman coal. We're not supposed to even be importing power from Montana or Wyoming that's powered by coal. And yet... what seems to run the wind power industry is nothing but subsidies. It's just not working. But we'll have a little discussion about that, too, along with your calls and opinion on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Oh, and people writing me worried about sodium hydroxide in the water. I just kind of wanted to call the dogs off on that criticism of the Medford Water Commission. But we'll talk a bit about that, too.
Maybe you've already checked out PlanZDiet.com. You went online and thought, maybe I could do this diet, but it doesn't fit in the budget. Hi, it's Zola, and I heard you. So I'm announcing a new way to access Plan Z. You can subscribe for $19 a month for as long as you need to keep losing weight. Like Hulu or Netflix, only a diet. You'll even get our restaurant guide so you can do this diet anywhere. Once you're a subscriber, you can buy 3 or 6 bottles of my patented ZR50 Crave Control Spray at a time, as needed, at a discount. For $19 a month, you're in the club. My husband says you can binge on Netflix and still lose 31 pounds in 50 days on your sofa. There's no exercise required to succeed on Plan Z. Ready to diet comfortably, maybe for the first time ever? Now you're in control. Plan Z gives you maximum flexibility and the minimum price. Get online, get involved, and get the weight off fast. PlanZDiet.com.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate, and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. A bill aimed at protecting kids on school buses passed both the Oregon Senate and House. House Bill 4147 would allow cameras to be installed on school buses to record drivers who fail to stop for bus safety lights. According to a press release from Portland State Senator Michael Denbro's office, law enforcement could then issue citations based off the recordings. It now heads to Governor Kotek's desk for her signature. And Governor Kotek is also speaking out in favor of a summer education bill. According to a press release, House Bill 4082 would provide $30 million in state funding for 2024 summer learning programs, as well as develop methods of securing future funding for other summer learning. Governor Kotek says summer learning accelerates academic achievement and reduces learning loss over the summer. The founder of Kids Unlimited Charter School, Tom Cole, says summer learning loss is a direct reflection of a lack of educational programs. And lastly, the Medford City Council is kicking off its second series of town halls. The city says council will be discussing updates from previous town halls on homelessness, transportation projects, current developments, and housing initiatives. They all run from 6 to 7:30. The first one kicks off April 3rd at the North Medford High School cafeteria, and the final one is happening May 1st at Rogue X. That's a look at your morning headlines for NBC5 News. I'm Natalie Serna.
You've heard us say it for years. The pests, mold, and allergens under your home impact the air you breathe inside your home. That's where Terra Firma Foundation Systems comes in. Dark and damp areas are breeding grounds for mold and mildew. Warming spring temps add humidity, making your crawl space a greenhouse. Stop the cycle. Terra Firma can turn your crawl space into a clean, dry, protected space. Visit GoTerraFirma.com to schedule your free evaluation today. CCB173547. That's GoTerraFirma.com.
Getting ready to refinance or sell your property? Once you get the process started, there'll be appraisals and inspections and, yes, well tests. So get ahead of the game and get your water tested now. You'll get the immediate peace of mind that comes with knowing what's in your water, plus you'll be able to close the deal faster. The team at Grants Pass Water Lab are ready to help. Look us up online at thewaterlab.com or gpwaterlab.com.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KCMD.
6:38. Part of the challenge is here, healthcare affordability. It's true. I mean, it comes right down to it. In fact, I even have a relative recently got onto Medicare and was talking about, all right, well, I guess the choice was, my private health insurance with $5,000 deductibles and insane. If premiums, or, well, again, on Medicare, and now I'm in Medicare, and then you read that Medicare is in trouble financially here. Is there a better way? Is there an alternative? Well, direct primary care has been something which has been growing in popularity. I wanted to talk with Dr. Josh Umber about that. He's the founder of Atlas MD. Dr. Josh, great having you on. Welcome.
Great being on. Thank you.
And you have this practice in Wichita, Kansas. When did you start it? How long back? And what got you going in this direction in the first place?
Well, we started in 2010, right after we graduated from family medicine residency. But I like to joke, I got the original idea from my dad. Growing up, he was a trash man. Mm-hmm. Now he's a lawyer, so we still tell people he's a trash man. Because that's embarrassing.
Well, there's more respect for the trash man over the lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know. But he ran a great business, and it was a monthly payment and weekly service. And then as I was a pre-med student and med student shadowing doctors and seeing the sausage get made, I said, none of this makes any sense. You're doing all of this extra work for, you know, small amounts of pay, or maybe you aren't paid, or it's not really helping the patients, and the doctors hate it. So, like, it felt like we were doing everything wrong, Emperor's New Clothes style. So we looked for clinics that weren't doing that, and those were clinics who did not take insurance, which seems counterintuitive, but I think that's often what you got to do. The thinking that got you here isn't the thinking that will get you there. So what we found is you can decrease the cost of care by 90%. If you remove health insurance, because you remove a lot of the staff, you remove a lot of the paperwork, the hassle, the rules.
Well, there's a lot of sand in the gears. There are a lot of people that are getting paid for you just going in and just to process the paperwork, isn't there?
Yeah.
Involving insurance?
Well, I love the sand in the gears. Exactly. Everyone is involved in this process, so they feel like their job is necessary in that until you show them otherwise. Or the reason people couldn't do telemedicine before COVID wasn't that technology didn't exist. It was that doctors wouldn't get paid if you didn't come through their door. So they wouldn't call, text, or email. And that's really sort of letting the insurance dictate service to us when we should really be putting patients first.
Isn't there also a federal government issue involving the insurance companies too? I'm looking back at COVID, Dr. Umber. I think back at during that time in which so many people that were resistant, let's say, to the to getting the mRNA vaccine jab. Okay, I remember that. And you had this situation though that any kind of alternative treatment got smacked down because the system. And when I say the system, I'm speaking of like the AMA. And the hospitals, and the hospitals buying up practices that were teetering during that time, too. It all seemed to be about practicing protocol rather than practicing medicine. Is that an unfair assertion or characterization of it, or how do you see that? I'm just wondering, what role does that play in these challenges we face?
I like to blame doctors for not innovating. We blamed government and insurance for decades, and that hasn't gotten us anywhere, because then we turn around and ask them to fix it. And I sort of joke that it's the sin of unoriginality. Yes, we continue to let sort of the default bureaucratic paperwork. I do what insurance will reimburse, and insurance will reimburse what seems to work, right? And healthcare moves slow in that regard, when we could have just first principle style backed up and said, well, I can't care for a patient who has diabetes and doesn't have insurance because it's harder. Mm-hmm. Why do you need insurance to care for diabetes? And if you come back at it that way, what you get is wholesale medicines and wholesale labs that are 95% less. Because if you have to find another payer for it, you innovate. And so an A1C, a test for diabetes, is $2.25. Right. The metformin to treat that's 2 cents a pill. I get 1,000 pills for like $20.
You get that right now? That's what you can pay? That's the wholesale price you're paying? 2 cents a pill?
14 years. Yeah.
2 cents a pill. Two cents a pill.
Exactly.
How much does a typical patient, though, pay out there in the standard world, the regular world?
Well, that's the problem, is there isn't a really good standard, because if I go to Best Buy, that price is going to be very similar to most other places because there's price transparency. But you could pay anywhere from Walmart $4 a list for 60 pills, which is still too much, if you ask me, is a percent markup, to GoodRx and see that in the $15, $20, $30 range, just depending on what that pharmacy wants to do. And we cut that to the bone. It's our cost plus 10%. Just that way we can pay for the bottle and the labels and these things. That extends to chemotherapy medicine. We had a patient with breast cancer that was being billed $700 a month for medicine that we could get generic wholesale, direct from the manufacturer, for six. Now, of course, that's not all meds, but I would say that's 80 or 90% of meds.
What about the really expensive ones? Because I recall that, a person very close to me was on was being treated on chemotherapy with Keytruda, and we were told it was $30,000 per treatment. Was that true? I could never really confirm that.
Well, I'd love to look it up and get back with you on that. Being a family doc, I don't have all those oncology meds at the top, but I would say I've had a patient with a brain tumor that they were told $26,000 that we could get for $1,200. $1,200 is still expensive, but it's better. Right. And if the patient's paying $1,200, it's a world of difference. But if your insurance is paying $1,200, it makes everyone's insurance cheaper. So it's sort of a fixing it for the patient in front of you, but fixing it for the system as well. We need all doctors innovating in their space to bring the most cost effective option to patients first, instead of relying on insurance just to cover everything. Not that insurance is bad directly. It's just not working. If it was working so well, we wouldn't be complaining that this is the highest, price that was ever paid for health insurance and no end in sight.
Well, it used to be that you would complain that, you had low-cost insurance for the most part, but it only really paid for the really major stuff, and so you paid for a lot of other stuff. So you complained about that. Now you're paying high cost for insurance. there is no cheap insurance right now. High cost,
right,
and high deductibles. You know, so it's like, you know, you're paying $10,000, $12,000, $13,000, $15,000 a year for your policy, mm-hmm. and you have $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 deductibles. That boy, someone's making money. But in a situation like that, aren't they? I mean, who's making the money when you see that?
Well, that's a little bit of everybody in a weird way. I think the government did the law of unintended consequences, in part with the Affordable Care Act. They said insurance can't make more than 15% profit they have to spend 85% of everything on patient care, mm-hmm. and the remaining 15% is for administrative costs, operating costs, and profit, which is fine, except now the only way to make more profit is to make the pie bigger, make everything more expensive.
Oh, so you're okay. Way. The insurance company's okay if it becomes more expensive because they're getting a bigger cut of that more expensive, right?
And you'd like to just sort of blame them for the system being bad, but the inverse of this is they are penalized if they don't spend 85% on patient care, because that sort of sounds right. Like, spend as much on patients as you can, but then there's no innovation. If they have a really good year and said, hey, we got a lot of docs to do these expensive meds wholesale and we saved buckets, we're going to be able to lower premiums next year, they'll be penalized. So the system needs to rework how we're thinking about these things. Einstein and sanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So we need to allow insurance to spend less on patients, which on its face sounds bad, if it's in the pursuit of lower premiums, more care more often for less money.
Would it be better for insurance companies to be paid a flat rate per patient rather than always getting a cut of what is being spent?
I think the best thing would be that the system has to have price transparency for everyone. This is the price, and anything other than that. Now, if my insurance wants to pay that price for me, okay. But the time of these ridiculous markups where, you see people get a $50,000 bill for the ER and then their insurance negotiates it down to, $1,000. It doesn't seem like a fair game when a patient sees that. It feels rigged.
It also seems to me that everyone, just under just fairness out there, everyone should be cut the same deal. If an insurance right. company can get that at $1,000, that should be the cash price when you go into the hospital, shouldn't it?
I think it should be. I think that transparency should be part of the issue, not this weird third party, we can't really tell you what the price is, but mm-hmm. we'll show you this bloated price, and maybe, that helps us look like we negotiated a better price. I can tell you exactly what every medicine in my pharmacy in my office costs. And that's exactly like every product in every grocery store. If Dillon's and Walgreens and CVS can tell you what everything costs on those shelves, but the medications behind the pharmacy desk, I think that says there's a problem.
All right, doctor.
We're hiding the prices from you so we can play this game.
Yeah.
Well, let's just stop playing the game.
Yeah, stop playing the game with hiding the price, too. Okay, yeah. Transparency. I'm talking with Dr. Josh Umber, by the way. Dr. Josh Umber, Atlas Medical, Atlas MD. You have a piece, an op-ed piece I wanted to touch into because I appreciate your not just talking about the problem, but you also have some suggestions on things that we can do to possibly lower some of these healthcare costs. And what you have been looking at is creating what's called a site-neutral policy. Could you give me a thumbnail sketch and help us understand what you mean by that? What is built into this big healthcare blob that you think that it could be fixed with a different way of looking at it?
Well, it's another great example of Medicare rules, the law of unintended consequences. What should happen is that doctors should be paid the same amount if they treat blood pressure in the hospital or in a doctor's office.
They're not paid the same right now?
No.
Oh.
At some point back, it was lobbied that, it's more expensive to care for patients inside of the hospital. And that might be true for ER and trauma and hospital beds. But then that filtered down to other things, just daily type care, right? And so they said, okay, we'll pay you more for where you're at because we assume it's expensive. Well, then the hospitals misused that and then went and started buying up doctor's offices, and then patients saw these surprise medical bills. Like, well, on Friday, you know, last time I saw the doctor, it was $100. Next time I saw the doctor, it was $100 plus an $800 hospital fee.
Ah, what you know, that? We've been experiencing that here in Southern Oregon with the hospital systems buying out medical practices and what and used to be independent practices. I think one of the oncology treatment centers was bought out there by one of the hospitals. And so everyone was talking about it got more expensive. This is what you're talking about then, right?
Yep, yep, exactly. And then they call that a satellite location of a hospital, but it's not, right? You know, I'll give you the fact that, yes, it's very expensive to have an ER or a trauma bay or an ICU, not so much to have a regular doctor's office. And so it's a misuse of good intentions to say, now let's buy up these doctor's offices, say they're part of our hospital, and then charge the patients a lot more for it.
Wow.
You know.
So, you know, I didn't realize that's what was driving the buying out of the doctors' independent practices around here. So they're able to call it the hospital, and the hospital gets paid more or charges more too. You know, for that same treatment. Oh.
It's the only reason they would, because typically hospitals lose money on outpatient offices, so they only want it if they can do some sort of additional service, like getting the referrals or funneling people to the ER or something. And so this was a great opportunity to kind of double dip. And they, you know, it's not the type of thing you would do if you were trying to have a patient-centered, transparent, affordable, equitable healthcare system.
All right. So get rid of the site location. So that way, you know, if they, in other words, if you're going to any place that is not actually the hospital, it's not considered the hospital anymore, and so it's not going to get paid as much, right? So there's that would also then leave a little more incentive for doctors to maintain their individual practices. Wouldn't that be true, ultimately?
Right. Well, it would remove the incentive for hospitals to own them, and so then it would give some breathing room back to independent practices, which is, I think, ultimately best for patients.
Do these Medicare rules on how they pay for this, does that also apply to, let's say, an urgent care center, or is that different? Is the urgent care center that may be run by a hospital system different?
That can be the same thing, yep. And so, again, double dipping to buy up these locations and boost the cost of care. And it'd be one thing if you put that price, and this is the secrecy is what patients hate. That's why it feels rigged, is if it was a hospital-owned urgent care with a menu on the wall like McDonald's. McDonald's has to tell me the calorie count of a meal, but the hospital doesn't have to tell me the bill for a strep throat swab. Well, one, it's free because it costs us a dollar. So we just give it to patients because it's the right thing to do. Two, if it was, you know, $100 and then an $800 hospital bill and that was on the wall, no one would ever go there. And so they can only do it because the prices are opaque and hidden and confusing. And, well, we could only possibly tell you if we knew your insurance and after the fact and yada, yada. No, if you can't tell me the price, there's something wrong. You know, list the price on everything you do or it's a problem.
And yet we have these laws that are, you know, ordering hospitals. Everyone's supposed to be transparent about it, but it sure seems to be hard to find it. Just me.
There's a lot to lose. So they're not making it easy. And you know, the previous administration did a lot of work on that, and the hospitals pushed back. The first rule was you have to publicly post them. Okay, well, they did, but they did it in proprietary computer language. I was like, well, it's posted. You didn't say it had to be readable.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll redo the law to say it has to be in a standard, you know, electronic format and
machine readable. Yeah, because you put it out there in a PDF. How about a PDF, right, that anybody could take a look at? Okay.
You know, and so then they just made the prices $9,999 for everything and said, oh, well, you didn't say they had to be accurate prices. I mean, we might charge that much for the thing, you know. So then, you know, kind of the third go-round was these have to be, you know, your actual charge master prices and machine readable and, you know, Excel or PDF. And so it's a shame that it took that much work to get the system. You know, I, in that regard, I blame admin, but I still blame doctors for not you know, kind of stepping up and saying, hey, if this isn't helping my patients, it's by default hurting my patients. And doctors are patients too, so they're frustrated with the system. So let's take some big, you know, swings. We go to the moon not because it's easy, but because it's hard and right. because it's good. And I don't think there's a patient on either political party that doesn't feel like they're a patient first. And or a political party first and a patient second. So,
no. Dr. Umber, for the longest time, I was wondering if I was being unfair when I would talk about the medical system as being the rackets. I always talk about the, you know, the medical system rackets. And the way you describe it is that, yeah, you know, the government rules essentially have created the incentives to build rackets. In effect, yeah. Isn't that really what we're talking about, what you've been discussing here?
And I mean, it more or less is, and because good people, good doctors aren't stepping up, and not all of them realize this. And we've been at this for 14 years, and granted, now, you know, the direct care movement grows by about 30% year over year. And to put into context, it still took Starbucks 16 years to get 17 stores. So these things have a history of moving slow, but that's why it is a grassroots movement. For patients to hear this, for doctors to hear this, for them to ask questions and say, I didn't realize I could dispense your migraine medicine for $195 less than the pharmacy. Let me do that for you because it's cheaper than your copay, and now you don't need as much insurance, so you have more money in your pocket to not be as stressed. There's nothing that doesn't get better when 20% of the GDP, it touches everything. Well, we can fix big chunks of it.
What do you think about Mark Cuban's effort in the pharmaceutical world? I think, what is it, Cost Plus? I forget the name of it. His, you know, real big discount online pharmacy. You know, the Shark Tank guy. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, no, I think he's a great distant second place. Mm-hmm. I like to joke there's not a billionaire on the planet that gets meds cheaper than we do.
So you get it cheaper than Mark Cuban even, right?
Yeah, we're 80% cheaper than Amazon, 70% cheaper than GoodRx, and 45% cheaper than Mark Cuban on average. He has some amazing prices on a few things, but by and large, he still has to,
he has to play a bit of the racket. He has to deal with the racket. Okay. All right.
He has to deal with that. And you still have to go pay for the doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Whereas for our membership, you get unlimited appointments and the medicines. So, he did what no one else was willing to do. He could do it a lot better. Still great that he's showing, you know, pulling that curtain back at least, you know, 45% of the way to show, like, okay, a lot of these can be done better. And if everybody just did those meds, we would save the system probably 10 or 20%, right?
Mm-hmm.
And start really pulling back these insurance premiums, which would mean more care more often. If people have unlimited visits, no copays, free procedures, free telemedicine, now you don't schedule a pink eye appointment and reorganize your whole day. You wake up, you text your doctor a picture, and you say, is this pink eye? And then they get back to you and say, no, but text me every hour, and we'll make sure it doesn't look worse. And, you know, now that's like multiple appointments with no scheduling, no insurance involved, fast, effective, et cetera. So,
hey, you know, Dr. Umber, one of the things I've been wondering about here is that I was even talking to our Congressman Bentz earlier this week on how we're at, you know, we're going up in debt. And and you have to say that the medical system and everything else, Medicare is 1/4 of the government spending right now. It's just insane. Or medical spending, rather, is through Medicare from the government. And we're going into debt $1 trillion more every 100 days. That is an absolutely unsustainable path here. And I can't help but wonder if we're almost in this race. You have the insane side about central medical single payer health care. Even Oregon stupidly voted for this in an election not that long ago. Yep, this is where we want to go, to universal health care, et cetera, et cetera. So you have that insane race. And then there's people like you in the direct primary care that are saying, hey, listen, no, you can't afford this. We got to go this way. Is that kind of the race that we're in right now to, all right, and maybe it's going to be insolvency that will drive us into the sane side rather than the insane universal side? What do you think?
Well, I love Churchill's quote, America will do the right thing after they've tried everything else.
Okay, I remember that.
And so I think that can apply here where the system is so big, it moves slow, you know, the incentives to change are skewed, but it's getting worse, right? Yes, you cannot now jump to a trillion every 50 days, and we can't go up. I mean, the national average for household insurance premiums is approaching the same or higher than their mortgage. At some point, this is unsustainable. But also, it's not working out really well in socialized countries either. And that's a conversation for another time. We get a lot of care, and I agree we pay a lot for it. But that's the beautiful part is we can go in and objectively show that, well, the difference between we have a list I can share of seizure meds, our cost versus pharmacy cost. Walgreens, $108. Our price, $1.32. A 99% difference.
Same
exact medicine, dose, number of pills, everything, right? So if we just fixed half of all the meds, right, and, you know, 80% of all meds are generic, and most of those you can decrease by 80 or 90%. And then, you know, for doctor's offices, eliminate copays. And then eliminate the paperwork, right? We keep trying to make these 5% changes, and there's a great book, 10X is easier than 2X. It's just actually easier to make big sweeping changes by removing, like, okay, the insurance doesn't need to know if you have strep throat, right? That's just, it's pay me direct for that and cut out all the paperwork, profit, headache, regulation, et cetera, and you'll get a better price, faster, cheaper, easier, and continuity of care. So now what you do need insurance for car wrecks, cancers, heart attacks, big, scary, unpredictable stuff. Great, just like home insurance and car insurance and life insurance. But if we did that, depending on the study, we could decrease our total healthcare spend by 30 to 75%. That would be basically $1 to $3 trillion back into our economy every year.
And doctors would still want to get into it and be able to earn a decent return in order to go to medical school. And same with nurses and everybody else that's involved. They'd still be able to do their thing, you think?
This is the best way of practicing medicine that I can imagine because we see a fair number of people per day, usually around 5 or 6 in the office. They get 30 to 60 minute appointments. We do their procedure on time. They pick up their meds. They get their lab results the next day. They can call, text, or email. There's no extra fees. It is my, I think, and for a lot of doctors, a very comfortable way of practicing relative to the current model, seeing 40 or 50 patients a day for 7 minutes a day, you know, and just back to back to back.
Yeah, well, I've often joked that my primary care physician is my imaginary friend because I practically see everyone except.
I'm stealing that.
Okay. Yes. You're going to steal that one? Okay, good. All right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Dr. Josh Umber. Okay, so we'll try everything else crazy before we collapse, we'll try doing the right thing. But I'm going to link to your your op-ed piece. It's called Lowering Healthcare Costs Through Site-Neutral Policies. Hey, it's a big part of this, and it's on realclearhealth.com. What is AtlasMD's website, too? Just for people
Atlas.md is a good website, or for a little bit more patient-centered stuff, Atlas.md/Wichita.
All right. Hey, I really appreciate the take on that, and thanks for sharing your thoughts on this. It's very thought-provoking, okay? You be well.
Absolutely.